I'm David Byrd in Washington. A partial government shutdown heads into its 20th day Thursday after a meeting between President Donald Trump and congressional Democrats on border security, and the partial government shutdown ended abruptly. The AP's Ed Donahue has details.
On Twitter, the president said the meeting with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was a complete waste of time.
He asked Speaker Pelosi, "Will you agree to my wall?" She said no. And he just got up and said, "Then we have nothing to discuss," and he just walked out.
Vice President Mike Pence says there was no willingness by Schumer or Pelosi to negotiate.
Even if he gave her what she wanted, she would never agree to the border security priorities that we have on the table.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's message to Democrats:
get back into the room.
Earlier, President Trump was asked how long the partial shutdown is going to last.
Whatever it takes.
Ed Donahue, Washington.
The nation's food inspection system has been affected by the partial government shutdown, but dozens of furloughed workers are expected to be called back to work. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The Food and Drug Administration oversees about three-quarters of the nation's food supply, and there are plans to call back about 150 workers to make sure critical inspections are conducted on risky food items, things like produce, cheese, baby formula, and imported items. But FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb says there will be a cutback for more routine foods, packaged goods like crackers that are low risk. The Center for Science in the Public Interest says it's not concerned about a brief lapse in food inspections, but it could become a health risk if the shutdown is long-term. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
For more on these stories, be sure to log on to our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Congo's Electoral Commission says opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi has won the presidential election as the vast country braces for possible protests over alleged rigging. Tshisekedi, who received more than 7 million votes, had not been widely considered the leading candidate. It is not immediately clear whether opposition candidate Martin Fayulu, who led in polling and warned against manipulation, will contest the results. Fayulu received around 6.4 million votes. The country's Conference of Catholic Bishops told diplomats that its count had Fayulu winning. Some observers have suggested that President Joseph Kabila's government sought to make a deal as hopes faded for a win for ruling party candidate Emmanuel Ramazade Shadari. Shadari received more than 4 million votes. The Constitutional Court has 14 days to validate the election results. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made unannounced visits Wednesday to Baghdad and Erbil to reassure allies amid U.S. plans to withdraw its troops from Syria. Pompeo met with Iraq's president, prime minister, and the head of its Council of Representatives. Later, the secretary met with Iraqi Kurdish leaders in Erbil. Pompeo said he reassured all the leaders of the United States' commitment to the region.
We had great conversations with the prime minister, with the president, with the whole team, the head of the Council of Representatives, and then we came here to Erbil and had conversations with the Kurdish leadership as well.
Pompeo's week-long trip to the Middle East comes after U.S. President Donald Trump's abrupt announcement last month that he will pull all 2,000 American troops from Syria, causing alarm among U.S. allies in the region. The U.N. Special Envoy for Yemen said Wednesday that a ceasefire for the crucial port city of Hodeidah is largely holding, but more progress needs to be made before a second round of peace talks can take place. Martin Griffiths, addressing the Security Council from Amman, Jordan, said a tangible contribution to peace has been made in the vital port city.
And this relative calm, I believe, sir, indicates the tangible benefit of the Stockholm Agreement for the people of Yemen. And it also illustrates the commitment of both parties to make their agreements work.
A Saudi Arabian-led coalition began bombing Iranian-aligned Houthi rebels in support of Yemen's government in March of 2015. Since then, the UN estimates more than 10,000 people have been killed. And 3 days of trade talks in Beijing between the United States and China ended Wednesday, with the White House expressing optimism. They were the first talks since Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping met in December. For more, log on to our website. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
the Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Thursday, January 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have begun announcing the results of the December 30th general election. Two international NGOs have closed their offices in Burundi. Malta lets stranded migrants disembark ahead of redistribution in Europe. Migrants in Spain double from previous year, and Rwandan prosecutors drop challenge to Diane Rigara's acquittal.
We welcome the prosecution decision to drop the appeal. There was no basis anyway for them to appeal. We have been found innocent by the previous court.
That's Rwanda dissident politician Diane Rigara, and former Sierra Leone military leader is being flown to Ghana today for medical treatment. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Electoral officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have begun announcing results of the December 30th general elections. Riot police were deployed in front of the Electoral Commission headquarters in the capital, Kinshasa, along with the city's main boulevard, as the country braces for possible violence and amid accusations of vote fraud. The Electoral Commission announced that Etienne Tshisekedi has won the election, with Fayulu coming second. Two NGOs in Burundi, including Handicap International, have closed their offices. The move comes after the Burundian government ordered all NGOs to recruit their staff based on Burundi's constitution, which calls for ethnic quotas. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Two non-government organizations announced the closure of their offices in the country after failing to comply with Burundi government's demand. Handicap International, a non-government organization, announced that it has been forced to stop its activities in the country after the government ordered the organization to keep a record of its employees' ethnicities. Dominique Delvin is the director of Handicap International in the Great Lakes region.
We recruit collaborators in Burundi since the last 26 years, depending on their skills, experience, and this is the main reason why we concentrated our recruitment. No, we never considered the ethnic origin as a criterion in the recruitment of the staff.
The Burundian government in October last year gave foreign non-government organizations a deadline of December 2018 to comply with the country's law in recruiting staff members. Article 148 of the country's constitution states that ethnic representation in public enterprises is 60% or less for Hutus and 40% for Tutsis. Tharcisse Niyongabo is the spokesman of Burundi's Home Affairs Ministry. He says that the law is from the country's constitution and it can't be changed, but rather the NGOs to conform to the Burundian laws. He says NGOs which are not capable of conforming to the new law, it means that they do not have place in Burundi. Dominique Delvin, the director of Handicap International in the Great Lakes region, said the organization will only consider returning to Burundi if conditions are different.
The closure of our office has a strong impact on the humanitarian side and a strong impact on our activities for sure. On the other hand, we are working also following some humanitarian principles and those principles are also very important, and we need to stick to them.
According to the Burundian government, among the 130 NGOs in the country, only 84 re-registered and complied with the new law. More NGOs in Burundi are expected to close the offices after the December 2018 deadline given by the Burundian government already passed. The decision is expected to negatively impact beneficiaries, and hundreds of Burundians are expected to lose their jobs. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Rwanda's National Public Prosecution Authority has withdrawn its appeal against the acquittal of Diane Shima Rigara and her mother. Prosecutor General Jean Bosco Mutagana had challenged the acquittal on the grounds that the prosecution had additional evidence against the pair. Eugene Iwimana has more from Kigali.
Following the Rwigara's acquittal last year, the prosecutors registered an appeal on the grounds they had additional evidence that could send Diane and her mother behind bars for a long time. But Faustin Musi, the spokesperson of the National Prosecution Authority, told VOA that they decided to drop the appeal at the request of Attorney General Johnson Businge. It is true we appealed on 27th December, but later we received a letter of the Attorney General asking us to withdraw the appeal, and we respected it. According to Article 145 of the Rwanda Constitution, it is acceptable for the Ministry of Justice to ask the prosecution to withdraw charges. Article 145 of the 2003 Rwanda Constitution, as revised in 2015, states that in matters relating to prosecution of offences, the Minister in Charge of Justice determines the general policy and may, in public interest, issue written instructions to the Prosecutor General to undertake or refrain from investigating and prosecuting an offence. But the Rwigara's case drew international attention and brought pressure to the Rwandan government. Faustin Musi dismissed the suggestion that the decision to withdraw charges was the result of international pressure. No, that's not true. This is law enforcement. It's normal because the prosecution is under the Ministry of Justice. For Diane Rwigara, a Rwandan dissident politician, this was great news. She expressed her insights in a VOA's Daybreak exclusive interview.
We welcomed the prosecution decision to drop the appeal. We are very happy about it. There was no basis anyway for them to appeal. We are innocent. We have been found innocent by the previous court. So they had no reason to drag us, me and my mother, back in court.
Diane Rwigara said that though doing politics in Rwanda looks risky, due to this decision, her political activities take higher than before.
I am continuing my political journey. Before I went to prison, I had founded a movement, the People's Salvation Movement, Itabaza, and I want this movement to be the channel through which our voices, Rwandan voices, can be heard. I want this movement to be the platform where we can all come together and hold the Rwandan government accountable. Doing politics in Rwanda, of course, it's always risky, but it's something that needs to be done because we need change in this country.
The Rwigaras, alongside four others who were tried in absentia, were accused of inciting insurrection among the population, discrimination and sectarian practices. Diane Rwigara faced separate forgery charges. In December 2018, a three-person high court bench ruled that the submissions by prosecution and the subsequent evidence presented did pin the accused but fell short of the beyond reasonable doubt threshold. Ejen Uimana for VOA News, Kigali.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today's Thursday, January 10th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. As we told you earlier, electoral officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have announced the results of the December 30th presidential elections. Joining us now from Kinshasa is Albert Moleka, former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. Thank you very much. Good morning to you from Washington, D.C.
Good morning, James.
So what did the Elections Commission say about the results?
Well, the result as published by the Electoral Commission gives Mr. Félix Tshisekedi as the winner with around 37% and Mr. Martin Fayulu, the runner-up, with about around 33% and a participation rate of 47%.
So what happens now, Fayulu and Tshisekedi? What happened? Are they going to be running the government together, or Tshisekedi is the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo?
Well, these are provisional results, which must be confirmed by the Constitutional Court. And then we will have to wait the results for the National Assembly, since the government will come from the majority in the Assembly.
So there were reports earlier that there was some negotiation going on between, say, the government, President Kabila's government, and, say, Tshisekedi, in terms of forming a unity government. Was that information available in the Democratic Republic of Congo?
Well, I think we must just wait for the results of the legislative elections, which have not been published yet, because, as I told you earlier, the government stems from the parliament, the majority which proposed the prime minister who will form the government. That's the process. And but I think the negotiations that you were talking about, they gave us also the result that we got today from the Chini.
How did the ruling coalition, Mr. Shadari, how did he do in the results?
Oh, Mr. Shadari comes as third with about less than 5 million votes. So about 17%, 15%.
Did the commission give complete results, or more results are expected to come, say parliamentary results?
No, for the House of Representatives, the results haven't been published yet. It won't be today. I mean, today it was the provincial elections for the provinces assembly.
So, Mr. Malika, how is the security situation in Kinshasa, where you are?
Well, Kinshasa is calm. You know, of course, people are celebrating here and there, but Kinshasa is calm. There's no so far, anything in terms of insecurity.
Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, James, and thank you to you. Bye-bye.
Hello. How do I identify you? Abba Malika is the former chief of staff of the late Etienne Tshisekedi. He was speaking with us from Kinshasa. Maltese Prime Minister Joseph Muscat announced Wednesday that his country would allow 49 migrants stranded on two German NGO vessels off its coast to disembark on the island. The deal was reached after 8 European Union nations agreed to take the migrants into their countries. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
The 49 migrants rescued by two German humanitarian vessels, the Sea Watch and CI, disembarked Wednesday using Maltese military patrol boats because the NGO ships have not been granted access to the port in La Valletta. For days, the migrants had been waiting to know what would happen to them, but the worsening weather conditions with strong winds and heavy seas helped reach a deal. 32 migrants on the Sea Watch had been rescued on December 22nd. The other 17 on the CI were saved on December 29th. Conditions for them on board were complicated by a lack of supplies. 8 European Union countries finally agreed to take the migrants if Malta would allow them to disembark. They included Germany, France, Portugal, Ireland, Romania, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and even Italy, which has been very vocal about not allowing more migrants on its shores. Talks are ongoing with other countries as well. Until Tuesday, the Maltese Prime Minister maintained that his island had already allowed the disembarkation of 249 migrants in late December and could not allow others to follow suit without an agreement for them as well. He got his way. Those migrants, too, will be redistributed in EU states, although a small number of them will stay in Malta. Some will also be returned to their country of origin, including 44 from Bangladesh. Prime Minister Muscat said every hour that went by without a solution was not something he was proud of. In the end, he said, a solution was found, but not by Europe. It was found by some of the member states. The deal reached showed fractures in the Italian government, where Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said Italy's acceptance of a group of migrant children with their parents would not affect the government's crackdown on accepting migrants. Interior Minister Matteo Salvini criticized the deal, saying it will further encourage human traffickers. Speaking in Poland, Salvini said, our objective is to safeguard external frontiers and not to redistribute inside Europe what risks becoming a huge problem. The Interior Minister added that an Italian police operation Wednesday led to the arrest of a number of North Africans charged with favoring illegal immigration, including one who praised Islamic terrorism. EU Migration Commissioner Dimitris Avramopoulos said that leaving the migrants at sea for so many days has not been an example of Europe's finest hour. He called for a much-needed reform of EU asylum rules, saying the bloc cannot count on disorganized ad hoc solutions. Currently, the asylum claims of migrants must be processed in the countries where they first arrive. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
While migrant arrivals to Italy dropped significantly in 2018, arrivals to Spain doubled from the previous year. Laura Lanuza, a spokesperson for Proactive Open Arms, a Spanish NGO that performs at sea rescues, says the Italian government's decision to shut down its ports to migrant boats has made sea rescues much more difficult.
But we have to remember that Libya is not a safe port, so you are not taking them to take them to a safe port, as we do, as we are an NGO. But what they do is to take them in the middle of the sea and take them back to the same place where they are escaping.
Have you seen traffic in the Mediterranean towards Spain go up since Italy stopped allowing migrant boats to land on its shores?
Yeah, yes, obviously. I mean, for sure, mafias, smugglers are not, you know, they know what they are doing, and they know that it's easy right now to go to the other route. I mean, the route through the south of Spain has always been there for decades now. At this point, it is true that as Libya conditions are getting worse for them, you know, they are moving towards the south of Spain. Obviously, at this point now, Morocco is negotiating with the Spanish government and the European Union for the same thing as these third countries like Turkey in 2016, Libya now, and now Morocco. They know that they can press the European Union in order to get money, and you know, and when the negotiation is on, you can realize that there are a lot of more people crossing as a way of pressure. I mean, we realize that because we saw it in Lesbos last in 2016. We have been seeing it in the Central Mediterranean, and we can see it now in the south of Spain. So we had a
This has to make your operations much more difficult. They take much longer. I'm sure they're much more expensive and much more dangerous for the migrants than I would imagine. If it takes you that long to get there and that long to get back in order to do another mission, correct?
Yes.
Once again, you expect it to kind of be the same thing where you have to go back to Spain, or are you going to make the call again and see who lets you land?
We follow the protocols. And so we'll see next time how it goes. Every time that we go at sea is a different scenario. So we never know. Hopefully, it would be perfect to have an Italian port or a Maltese port to disembark, but we know it won't be that, because at the moment, for example, Sea Watch 3, which is a boat of another NGO, rescued over 40 people the same day that we did, and still they are waiting for a port. Since then, they have been 3 weeks nearly they are. I mean, they are still are with migrants on board and no port to disembark, which is terrible.
That was Laura Lanuza, a spokesperson for Proactive Open Arms. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Barcelona, Spain. Former Sierra Leone military leader Captain Valentine Strasser is being flown to Ghana today, Thursday, for medical treatment. Sierra Leone Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari says President Julius Maada Bio has concluded arrangements for the former head of state to be medically evacuated.
The former chairman of the NPRC has been sick for a while. He was initially admitted at the 34 military hospital, but because his situation was deteriorating, they took him to a private hospital at the behest of government. So as I speak to you, he's at the Aspen Hospital, where he's currently responding to treatment, but his situation is still there. So arrangements are now in place. Government has put necessary arrangements in place. He will be evacuated tomorrow morning by an air ambulance to Accra, where all arrangements have now been put in place with the embassy on alert, and the medical doctors themselves will be receiving him. So all is now set for his medical evacuation tomorrow morning.
So these arrangements you are talking about, are this one-time thing, the fact that he's being flown to Ghana, or was the government taking care of him all these years?
Well, we are a new government. We only came into office a few months ago. And President Bio is one that values national service. He recognizes that at a very defining moment in this country's history, retired Captain Strasser, you know, led a group of very bold and patriotic gentlemen to change the course of our history for better. In that context, yes, the state is underwriting all his bills.
As a former head of state, was he receiving any financial benefits from the government of Sierra Leone?
Well, it's unfortunate the successive regimes have not recognized the patriotic service, the men and women who rescued this country from imminent collapse in 1992 did to this service. Even the current president, retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio, is receiving a very insulting and paltry pension as a former military man. You know, in a recent conversation, he bemoaned that. And that is why in the 2019 budget, he has increased pensions from the insulting 30, 40,000 that they were to 250,000 leones, because he believes national service should be rewarded, particularly in the twilight days of those who have given up their best for the service of their country.
You know, I'm looking at a picture of a very young Captain Strasser, and now a picture of him with President Maada Bio at his hospital bed. Does the government know what kind of medical problems he has right now?
Well, you know, I could also picture him in my mind's eyes, because I had literally just entered university in 1992 when the coup happened. He was quite a bubbly young man, very, very energetic. But that is what ill health does. This government is committed to rehabilitating him, to restoring him to the best that we could, hopefully ensuring that he's able to live a more decent life thereafter. President Bio is a very, very compassionate person, and he believes that national service is not something you weave off. He recognizes people for their contributions to national development.
Mohamed Rahman Swari is Sierra Leone's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Electoral officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have announced results of the December 30th presidential election. The Electoral Commission says Felix Tshisekedi took first place, followed by Martin Fayulu. That's it for this Thursday, January 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clouty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, some Africans have concerns that Western versions of democracy are being imposed on the continent. Are democratic governments what's best for Africa? We'll discuss the issue on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.